Welcome to a Sustainable Lens Resilience on Radio special. In June 2015, I was lucky enough to travel to the University of California, Irvine, supported by the Newkirk Center for Science and Society. There I met and had a conversation with Dr. Peter Bowler from the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology. You can listen to the full conversation with him on sustainablelens.org. After that, we went on a field trip around the salt marsh. Peter tells us where we're going.
It's UCI's North Campus, and now we are entering the marsh. And back in 1989, UCI developed its first long-range development plan. And that doesn't mean they didn't have plans. It just means that that's a technical fulfillment of a particular law here in California, California Environmental Quality Act. And so the natural reserve system, my colleague and I, managed to negotiate a 150-foot no-build zone between the wetland, this 202-acre 1970 purchased site, and this uplands that eventually will be developed, but not for 150 feet. When the university got this land in 1965, there wasn't a plant on it. It was an absolute desert. And so my students and I have created coastal sage scrub here. And I always make the point that it's extremely important for wetlands to have some natural adjacent uplands, that people used to think you could build right down to the water and have your bulwark and your little lawn and sit there and drink a martini and fish and everything's great. But today we know that actually these areas need each other and there's a beautiful exchange between them. Now, we do have, non-native species, but on the other hand, these shrubs are all native. There's another rabbit. This is a site that my students and I built in 1991, and it's still surviving. And I have some dinosaurs sitting over there on some of those cacti. I always say, our theory is, we build it and they will come. They'll come back. But you know, there's been a lot of wonderful student participating kinds of research that's done out here. We have three species of willows, and it turns out that willows have male plants and female plants, whereas 90% of higher plants don't. So we went through and inventoried the entire area, the marsh, all sorts of surrounding areas, and developed a sex ratio for different sites. And so we're publishing this, myself along with 27 students. And one of the points we're trying to make is that if you expand a natural area like this wetland, you should try to figure out what the sex ratios are before you do planting, and that you should really then only take one cutting per donor so that you maximize genetic expression. And there actually are galls that specialize on the male catkins. So that's one sort of higher food chain level that is directly impacted by this.
So what was this like when you got it?
It had a lot more open water. We used to kayak out here and stuff, but what happened was at the same time that channelization occurred in the late 1960s, the local sewage company, the Irvine Ranch Water District, moved in, and they today would never have been allowed to locate a sewer treatment plant in a wetland, but they did. And to keep their facility intact and stable, they have to pump water out of the ground. And so for these various reasons, groundwater has fallen about 17 feet. And we went from what was originally a groundwater-based system, a groundwater depressional wetland, to a system today that we have to pump water into. So it's now a surface water.
Are they continuing wetland to pump water out?
Oh, yeah. This is a removed road, and it's important to us because it's one of the only ways that we can actually increase wetland habitat. And it's open water, which is important as well. Since 19, the early 1970s, cattails, which are shallow water invaders, have been moving in and filling up all the open water. We still have areas of open water, but having new areas is important to us, and this is the only way we can do it.
What's that? What's the big shiny building?
I always say it's mortar in the two towers, but it's actually the Food and Drug Administration super lab that UC sold them that little knoll to build it on. Now, just to sort of orient you, we just came through an area that is about 150 acres, three large ponds, sort of wrapping around the bluffs. Those are only wet from January until July at the latest this year. They're dry now by mid-June. And so, therefore, not being able to do anything about it, I call it, it's a victory, it's a Mediterranean marsh. It's wet in the winter and dry in the summer. These ponds are experimental ponds that I designed, and we pump water into them, and we can either pump it from San Diego Creek if the salinity is favorable, because I think taking it above 10 parts per thousand salinity, you lose your freshwater wetland indicator plant species. Or we can pump it out of the big ponds when they have water in them. But this year we weren't able to get as much water as we want, and now we're entrapped by the Migratory Bird Act, which restricts altering habitat during nesting season, which is certainly a valid thing. That terminates September 15th, and on that day we'll start pumping more water in. But I'll be out here today with...
That's because they nest at that
They could be nesting point. Anywhere out right. here, yeah. One real big asset we have here is we have a huge population, the largest in Southern California, of the Pacific pond turtle. We have over an estimated 300 animals out here now, and it's probably going to be listed as an endangered species, and if it is, then it'll make management more sensitive here. But the bottom line is we've managed to keep it going, you know.
Were they here originally?
Yeah. And there are some salt marsh elements here already. You see the pickleweed?
Mm-hmm.
That's a common halophytic species. Well, should you choose to cancel your flight, I have to give a lecture this afternoon, but then I'm going to be taking students down around Newport Back Bay, and next trip you'll enjoy
next
that.
Next trip.
So during the lab practical, students have to wade out into the water, and usually it's much deeper, but they have to wade out into the water, and the questions are tied to the top of each post. And then also some of them are hidden in the bushes, and they have to look for that. Is that a turtle up here? Gosh, that would be a bone, wouldn't it? My golly. You know what? You are so lucky. We're going to get out. I've got to take a picture of it. The first, listen to this. I caught a turtle out here last, exactly like this. It was the first turtle in 2009 that was ever tagged here, that was ever in there. As you can see, this is a marked animal. Gosh, something tried to eat it, probably a coyote. Okay. Yeah, he's okay. But you see, these notches are non-invasive, and there's a numbering system, and so we know everything about this turtle. And somebody did try to bite him. We have coyotes out here. Isn't that cool?
Isn't that cool?
Man, it's been a hard life for this guy out here.
You wouldn't expect him to be out here in the sun.
Hi.
What's he doing out here?
I think someone was trying to eat him. but they do go from pond to pond. And this is a really tough, hardy species. You know, they can withstand variations in salinity, pollution. Because we've lost 91% of our habitat, that's what the problem is, you know. Isn't this great?
Yeah.
Very, very nice. I think I'll put him over here in the grass so he can... Let's just walk around and put him over by the water. Black-necked stilts.
Can you tell how old it is?
I can't, but I can let you know. Barry would be able to tell you. Yeah, see, this is, his rostrum is cracked here. Can't see the tooth mark. Basically, in these created ponds, the way we manage them is in the fall, we mow them. We mow the shallow shelf area and then flood it with water. This stays wet all the time. And I have three different bulrushes here. This is the California bulrush. And this is our coastal bulrush. And then there's a third species, I don't think right here, but a third also sort of intermediate species. And we wanted this to be a bulrush dominated habitat rather than cattails, as is the case with that other 150 mm-hmm. acres. I'm not really a big fan of sort of microtomic descriptions of habitat types, but that's the popular thing in California now. They're associations. But this one hasn't been described, and it's actually quite cool. As these pond bottoms and shelves dry out, there is a wonderful native species that appears, and it is about the only native ice plant family plant that we have here in California. And this is it. It has beautiful red flowers. This is Sesuvium varicosum. And of course it's in the Azoaceae. It's also edible. It's called Western Sea Purslane. And that's because superficially it looks like the European Portulacra, unrelated. Yeah. But many native butterflies really use these plants. This is particularly Lycinid butterflies. I'm pretty blind, but I think that's a marine blue. It's really pretty.
Oh, yes.
They love the iridescent flowers.
So what was this area in the 50s and 60s?
It was, they actually did some agriculture out here. These were fields, and duck hunting clubs would put water in them, and I think they just diverted a little San Diego Creek water seasonally to shoot ducks, and then because there were a lot of hunt clubs in those days.
So will this dry out more?
It'll dry out more. It won't get completely dry, but it will dry out more, and then September 15th I'll start adding water just as fast as I can. That's a snowy egret over there. We also have a lot of great egrets. And the bird that's calling is the black-necked stilt, a really lovely bird.
Oh, there it is. Is that it on the...
On the bank.
On that bank there.
Yeah. But you see, with Newport Back Bay, 900 acres right below us here, these are like two core reserves with San Diego Creek as a corridor between them. And we have about four species of swallows here. You know, we're all into sustainability, but in California, it's not legal to have human contact with reclaimed water. And reclaimed water is basically secondarily treated human sewage that has been filtered and chlorinated. So this water is not reclaimed water, so that we can do studies in it and mm-hmm. students can actually get wet.
Do you maintain the herbarium?
Yeah, I maintain the herbarium, and unfortunately the room that it's in, the roof has sort of collapsed and I'm trying to find some place to move it to, but it's basically the base herbarium that the first checklist for this county were done from. And this is an osprey perch, an osprey platform over here. And this year they nested over on those light towers, those light poles in the Crawford Field. But one of the problems with this has been, it turns out the crows and the ospreys have a vendetta against each other. And so the crows dismantle stick by stick. Thousands of them come over here and they take the nest apart. So I'm hoping that we can put the nest back up and that the habitat has changed enough that it won't be attractive to the crows. This is a mitigation area, and this year I was unable to get water in it, but I will September 15th. I had a really weird thing happen. I had purchased a large pump on a grant in 2002, and it turns out that there must be some limit that you can relicense the engine. It was only like a 120 horsepower gas engine, but somebody filed a complaint against the university, and so I had to remove it, and then I was going to have a commercial pumping company come in and do it. Salinities were wrong. I wasn't given the water I'd been promised by this, you know, IRWD, and so I had to sacrifice this for now. It'll come back when
Will it come back?
Yeah, it will.
How tolerant all this stuff?
Well, it will come back. This attractive plant is deadly. It's very evil. It's beautiful but evil. It's Cynara cardunculus, the cardoon from Europe, European origin. And my students and I come out and kill it. And as we do, we say, "Sayonara, sayonara." So this is our pump station for the creek. But because we're in a drought, there's been so little fresh water going through the creek that it hasn't been able to flush the salt water out. And salt water gets to 27 parts per thousand. Ocean water is 35, fresh water is 0.5 or less. And so I had to bite the bullet, and I was putting water in that was up to 10. But I don't want to go any higher than that. But all this entire peripheral planting of coastal sage and that community was stuff that my students and I did. So we have one problem non-native animal here, and that is the South African clawed frog. It was introduced, back in the 50s, and originally was used as some sort of a human pregnancy test model. And then it escaped, and now is very problematic, and it eats sort of by inhaling tadpoles primarily of other amphibians. So our native amphibians, which are the western toad, the Pacific tree frog, the slender salamander, all are restricted in their reproductive efforts to areas that the clawed frog doesn't like. So the clawed frog dominates the deep water sites, and these others have to go to shallow sites along the edge. So one of the other dream things is I'm going to try to get a bunch more roads removed. Actually, between road removal and seasonal closure of the roads, I have about 40% of the roads essentially blocked off. And you can see that this was originally laid out as sort of a duck hunting club, you know, in squares and rectangles. And so again, these three, this large arc around the bluffs, it's wet. We get water in it in January, and then it stays saturated until this year, just recently, but usually until about July. And one other sensitive issue about having a wetland like this adjacent to so many people is vector control. We have a lot of mosquitoes, but the way that we manage it, drying it out, letting the shallow areas that are good oviposition sites dry, are, it's very positive way to control mosquitoes. So we have a big West Nile virus problem here in our county. Last year there were 8 human deaths and something like 280. None from this marsh though. Also, hey, there's a roadrunner. Just above the buckwheat. Just watch for a second. He raises and waves his tail.
Oh, yes.
You want to try to get a picture?
Yeah, I do.
They nest out here. This is an area that I started working on in 1990. My students and I also, in the late 1990s, built 6 vernal pools. This is a closed road, and so we put in 6 vernal pools, and they really did well. Do you know what a vernal pool is?
No.
It's a season. It's a very small, seasonally wet pool, usually a foot or so deep, and it's wetted by the rains in the winter here, and then it dries up in the summer. And the unique things about our vernal pools, as opposed to those in South Africa, let's see what that is, and other areas, is that there's been a radiation of certain kinds of crustaceans in them. The fairy shrimp is the most famous one. And we have a non-endangered fairy shrimp in these. It's really cool to be able to show students. And then there's the other
running along the road.
Yeah. It's probably its mate. And then also there are about 6 vernal pool plants. Let me just point out one quick plant to you here. This is a rare plant, so you can say that you... Just take a sec. This is what we used to call a Hemizonia. It's now Centromatia, Perii subspecies Australis. And it's a rare plant, believe it or not. And for some reasons, I've no idea why, it likes disturbed habitats like this road. And this is buckwheat, which is one of the few evergreen coastal sage scrub species. And this is black sage. Basically here, as I'm sure you could imagine and figure out, in temperate areas with frost, plants lose their leaves to avoid freezing. Here, we don't have freezing, so plants break dormancy and are physiologically active in the winter. In the summer, they lose their leaves. So there are 3 strategies. One is you lose all your leaves. The second is you lose winter leaves and then form secondary leaves that are very tiny and tough. And then the third strategy is to recurl your leaves. All of these are an attempt to reduce water loss. This is the native prickly pear cactus, and my students and I planted these.
Carefully.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's great to know that you have botanical interests. I'll tell you what, I want to have you photograph a harlequin beetle, because okay. They're a really cool thing that are obligately associated with another native plant. And actually we have a woman studying only box thorns, and up here we're coming to poison ivy. I tried to spread it around more, but it was unsuccessful. It's Datura Jimson weed, and it's a native, and it contains some psychedelic drugs. Basically, the adolescents who try it hallucinate until they die. I mean, it's poisonous too, so, but it does have some psychedelic properties. Nice cactus. This was flowering not too long ago. But this is our local cholla. It's a coastal cholla.
Yeah. It's a different shape, isn't it?
Yeah,
not just a different shape, but
it's a different genus too. Well, there are a few flowers, but not very many. It has red flowers, and I got this from the ecological preserve and planted them as individual individual segments, you know. And so my last my dear friend and employee retired at 70 last summer, and there hasn't been any funding to replace him, and so I put a grant proposal in, but it's a challenge. People don't realize how much time it takes to do anything. There's a local alternative school that the kids come out and do projects, so they're building a little Indian thing here. Yeah, let's just race over here and look at the splatter pod for one sec. This?
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible. It's a crystalline ice plant from South Africa. It actually is edible. It's hard to find. It's so old right now. It's an annual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, just try breaking off a little piece of it. Again, it's pretty good. A lot of salt gets concentrated in these, so it's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. When it dies back, it takes salt on the surface and other plants can't germinate.
It is.
It really is. It's to realize this is in the middle of a dense urban setting.